statistically speaking, most wealth is lost in the third generation. Mm. So you have somebody like you and your husband who mm-hmm. hustle, mm-hmm. build an empire, build mm-hmm. a brand. Your children spend it, and then when it gets to their kids, which is your grandkids, there's nothing left. And that's 70% of all wealth.
Have you ever looked around at others thriving in business and wondered, what's the secret? Welcome to the Hustle Podcast, where we pull back the curtain to reveal people's individual stories of success and failure to bring you real experience that you can pull from to help you reach your personal and professional goals. So let's go.
Well, I'm very excited to introduce our next guest of the week, which is Samia. She actually is one of our clients, and we've gotten to know her and her husband over the last couple of, you know, gosh, maybe like 45 days. I've seen you on Instagram and everything, and in our podcast journey of really honing in the hustle and the entrepreneur lifestyle, you have such a really cool background of money management, the heart behind money, and a bit more of like a spiritual journey with it as well, which is, I think, very empowerful for those that can relate to that. And also, I'm sure you have such a desire for just more of a tangible way of operating in money in your day-to-day life and your business. So, Samia, thanks so much for coming.
Thanks for having me.
You are in our first podcast studio, so welcome.
I bless the studio.
And we will kick it off. So tell us a little bit about those that don't know you, kind of your background and kind of where you've gotten into this mindset of teaching people a better understanding of how to operate money in their day-to-day life.
Yeah. I do a lot of financial coaching, financial consulting. I have around 20 years of experience in finance. And so that is where the expertise comes from. But I started off in banking, in commercial lending, believe it or not.
I know. That's a little tough.
Lending experience.
We just did a commercial loan.
I have a special place in my heart for underwriters and commercial lending.
Yeah.
And after that, I got into financial advising and got my Series 7. And I actually managed money for high net worth families.
Okay.
And I was on a team. And we managed it was close to $300 million. And it was mostly just super wealthy families. And it was great because I got a front row seat to how it gets created generationally, the third, fourth, and fifth, and so on generation. Mm. And it was just so interesting to me because 99% of them made their money in either real estate, the stock market, or a selection of both. Mm. You think they have like this crazy product on the shelves of Target or they came up with like the cure to cancer or, you know, but it's actually something that is accessible to anyone. Mm. And so I did that for many years. And after my kind of chapter in my life of finance, I ended up getting into fashion.
Wow.
Believe it or not.
Clearly you look amazing. So, I look like, you know, my t-shirt over here. It's fine.
You are the embodiment of branding right now. You own it, Faith.
Yeah, you're complimenting me. So,
and you have a Disney princess smile, so you're fine. You're doing fine. So I ended up getting into fashion and I opened up a clothing store with a friend of mine.
Okay.
I'm from South Florida. So the clothing store was in South Florida. And it's a pretty like wealthy area in that Palm Beach area. Mm-hmm. And there's a former president that lives there. So most people know the city of Palm Beach. And I ran that store for 6 years before selling it. And instead of like helping people invest their money, I was helping them spend it. It's like way more fun. You way help people fun. Spend money
yeah,
too.
I do. Technically, I do. I'm like, you want to buy a house? I got you.
Sometimes it's the biggest purchase of their life, but it's fine.
It's fine.
Still helping them spend. So that's kind of my background in a nutshell. And then in 2020, I actually ended up writing a book. Shameless plug. It's called Money Handbook.
Okay.
And it has practical steps on how to create wealth. And it also has a few chapters on just spiritually speaking, like biblical principles and what they have to say about finances, because it actually, there is a lot of wisdom in the Bible about it. Mm-hmm. And so I give some of my journey, and I was raised in like a traditional Jewish home, and just some of the things that I learned growing up in that type of environment on values surrounding money. And so yeah, the book's been a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Because I've been able to do some public speaking and I've been able to teach.
Podcast.
Yes, I get invited on podcasts now, which is fun. So that's my angle, is mainly just teaching people, you know, how to build wealth and also how to not let it entangle you. Because I think one of the biggest trap with entrepreneurs and business owners and even just, you know, W-2 employees, because you can make a lot of money as a W-2. CEOs, COOs, they're doing just fine. One of the biggest traps is falling into greed. And whenever that gets into kind of somebody's decision-making process, generally they become people you don't want to hang out with. So like, don't be like that person. Be cool.
Like drives you.
Be like Faith.
Yeah. Thank you. Shameless plug for myself. No, I'm just kidding.
Yes.
So backing up to when you did your financial journey with, you know, the larger, wealthier people that you sat with, obviously to have a seat at that table, to ask questions, to learn from them, to experience like the access that they have to money. I mean, so many people probably listening or just in our area just probably are never going to be able to rub shoulders with people like that, or have the place to have that conversation. What would you say was kind of the biggest theme out of operating your business and, you know, working with people in that type of industry to either curate a better understanding of money in general or kind of almost funneling your understanding of how to operate in money better? Like, was there a pro or con to it? Like, did you see the ugly or like the blessing out of it?
Wasn't there some rap song like Mo Money, Mo Problems?
I mean, if you want to take the stage, go for it.
That's a real thing. The healthier families, they had a focus on legacy. So it was like leaving an inheritance to your children's children was something that was their why. Like, what is the why? Because sometimes people can get to a place of wealth that they actually don't even need to make money anymore. It's now a matter of, okay, how do we have this last for the generations? Because statistically speaking, most wealth is lost in the third generation. So you have somebody like you and your husband who hustle, build an empire, build a brand. You end up giving it to your kids. You are the one who literally plowed concrete to get to where you are. Your children spend it. And then when it gets to their kids, which is your grandkids, there's nothing left. And that's 70% of all wealth is lost by the third generation. And the main issue is knowledge is not being passed down. People sometimes think like inheritance is money, but it's actually also knowledge. Because if you don't have literacy on how to have rental portfolios and
spend it, hold it, or reinvest in it.
All the things.
Somebody just looks at it as like a number and is like, oh, I have access to $1 million. How do I go spend? Like, don't know how to stretch it or reinvest it so it makes more.
And that's why most people who win the lottery lose the money and become bankrupt like within 18 months. And so the two main things was legacy and the second was education. And so a lot of times they would structure trusts where their children, their grandchildren actually didn't get the money right away when they died. I call this controlling your money from the grave, which is very possible with trusts. And what would happen is there'd be certain stipulations like four-year degree and you get like a percentage of the inheritance. And then when you're 30, you get a percentage. And then when you're 40, you get a percentage. And if you can, you know, use the money as a loan if you want to start a business, but you have to pay it back with interest. And like there was a lot of things set in place so that they didn't just like blow up their life or like go start a rock and roll band and just, you know.
Just waste it. Interesting.
So there's a lot of wisdom. That can be used to make sure it gets, you know, you're like the next Rockefeller, basically.
Totally. And I think a lot of people obviously might not see their asset of what they're passing down as. I mean, obviously there's definitely like a percentage of people that there is a massive asset that somebody is going to inherit and their children, et cetera. But I mean, I think even simply as like, you know, if my parents pass, I mean, my parents have been very generous, like, you know, wealthy to what they would say humbly, like not wealthy, but I'm like, in my eyes, you've been wealthy with your time, generosity, education, and being wise in where you invest. And I think that, you know, people that pass that along, like you said, don't future set it up for people. Like, let's say I didn't know anything about money, had no idea how to like invest into real estate or stocks mm-hmm. or anything. And all of a sudden my parents die and it's like, oh, well, cool. Like I get $100,000. Like that's a lot of money and you don't know what to do with it. And so that's interesting to like control it from the grave. Like I've never mm-hmm. actually heard that. I mean, it does make sense. We just wrote a trust and we were just like, oh, free, okay. Here you go.
Just like disclaimer.
Yeah.
Sitting with an attorney and writing a trust, let's be super real. It is so depressing. So what they do is they kill off everyone in your family. Mm-hmm. And they're like, if this person dies, what are we doing with your like, children and assets? If that
ahead.
Person dies, yeah. if this person, you're just like, man.
Yeah.
I need to go watch a comedy after this. It's like pretty rough, but important.
It is important.
Family trusts are important.
Family trusts are important. Yeah. We finally got ourselves into a trust. I think it took my mom nagging me long enough to be like, Faith, you really need to get in a trust. And I'm like, okay, all right. Who wants it? What do we do? So yeah. And then Dylan named it after a whale. So that's our trust name.
Well done, Dylan.
We're the Orca Trust. He goes, nobody will know. And I was like, babe, people will always find out. But yeah,
so funny.
He's like, I love whales. And I'm like, okay. Anyway, so that's our legacy as a whale.
Cute.
So
I like it.
Anyway, but moving forward into actually stepping into the financial world of, you know, running a little bit more of a, would you say, a traditional kind of model of after you stepped out of the wealthy kind of managing that money mm-hmm. and assets and funds, and then you moved into actually getting license and what would, and you got into fashion and then, you know, wrote a book out of like your theme of everything. What was, you know, we deal with a lot of people in our area and town that don't have a lot of wealth. Their parents maybe don't have a lot to pass down, don't have mm-hmm. like that success to step back into or sit on and say, when my parents pass, at least I can guarantee this.
Right.
So what do you tell the person who is grinding, doing the thing, maybe isn't going to be that person that on paper is going to be the doctor and cure cancer and have that break in their life to mm-hmm. get that financial freedom. What do you tell that person who's trying to build that, just, I guess, more of a normal legacy of financial, you know, where maybe you have to grind to get to there. And it may just look a little bit different than, you know, the next person.
I actually think it's really important for every family to have a mission statement. Mm-hmm. Because people have different goals and there's things that motivate them. Like mm-hmm. everyone kind of has like a different why. Mm-hmm. And so when we're self-focused, mm-hmm. we actually can become kind of selfish. So if we can sit with our spouse and go, okay, the goal is to make money. Mm-hmm. The goal is to make a difference. But what do we want our impact to be? Mm-hmm. And then if you sort of remove yourself from the equation, you can come up with a lot of like creative ideas for that. But to say to the person who maybe like doesn't come from money mm-hmm. and they want it to be different for them, like they want to be the ones who plow that path mm-hmm. for their kids, I would say to start with real estate. Mm-hmm. And for two reasons. One, it appreciates. Mm-hmm. And two, it's a great source where you can have extra streams of income. Because mm-hmm. a lot of times, people look at their expenses and they're like, okay, how do I cut my expenses? Like, right. am I really watching Netflix? Like, do I really go to the gym I'm paying for every month? And they start trying to like, you know, squeeze. They mm-hmm. get into the budgeting mode, which there's nothing wrong with that. The issue is cutting your expenses, it's great, but it's not going to help you create wealth.
Yeah.
So sometimes the issue isn't your expenses. The issue is you're under-earning. Mm-hmm. So I always encourage people, because I teach locally as well, the mm-hmm. students that I teach, I always encourage them, like, you really need to know what your strengths are mm-hmm. and what you have to offer mm-hmm. and make sure that you are being compensated accordingly. And if you have to go back to school for a year or two so that after that you can now be making six figures a year for like the next 80 years of your life, it's totally worth that investment. Because I have no issues with debt as long as it's used as a tool for increase, mm-hmm. whether that's you go into debt to, you know, get an investment property, which increases, or you have to take on some student loans, which increases your value in the marketplace.
Right.
Because really the purpose of debt is for it to be a tool. Mm-hmm. Obviously we don't want credit card debt because that's right. ridiculous.
Yeah.
But I'm saying from a business standpoint, using it for growth.
Mm-hmm. I think that's a really powerful thing because I think a lot of people look at it as like, how can I cut my expenses? You know, how can I live, you know, more conservatively?
They get into like lack.
Yeah.
And I come from a place of like, how can you grow? How
right.
can you make more money? How can you use your skill set? Do
right.
you like people? Great. Get into sales.
Right. Exactly.
Are you more of an introvert? Cool. Go figure out how to code and become an engineer. Like mm-hmm. just whatever skill set you have, be making
yeah.
the most amount of money with that. And if you feel that there's areas in your life that you can like maybe grow in or get stronger in,
yeah.
go get educated.
Yeah.
It's worth it.
And I think I've listened to a little bit of your sound bits and everything, but and when you did the podcast with Chris Lamb, but
okay.
I think that all to soundboard off of that, I think it's having the right people in your corner to like coach you through that.
Yeah.
Because it's a daunting task to feel, you know, my family, this isn't me, but for somebody who might be listening, my family didn't go to school. My family didn't have this, like it to lead the pack and like take a charge forward and say
yeah.
like, I'm going to do X, Y, and Z, can be a really daunting task. And then your family over there might not be the most best cheerleaders in your corner. Like,
right.
why would you go do that? You could just do this versus that. And it becomes like, you get stuck, you get paralyzed in like trying to make that generational switch versus, I'll just go the easy route of my dad's always done this. I guess
mm-hmm.
I'll do this. I might only make this amount, blah, 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 blah. And so I think to back that up, like for somebody who might be listening and saying like, I am that person, how do I excel farther? It's, you know, reading books, like what you wrote to help empower those people, coaching, being in a network of people that
yeah.
help you think bigger than what you're capable of doing. Cause some people ask me like, how did you get into real estate? And I'm like, genuinely, I have never owned a business. Like this is my first business. I've never owned a business. I went to school as a nurse, got my nursing license, did nursing for 5 years. Yeah, I have that sound lily pad degree to hang my hat on if the sky fell apart, like for sure. But I jumped into owning a business and kind of just fumbling through it and figuring it out. And, you know, mistakes, here we are. Mm-hmm. But it took coaching. We got into coaching right away to get somebody in our corner to say, like, this is how you build a business. This is what you do. And, you know, I think it just, I don't know, what's the worst that's going to happen? That's always I ask, like, what's the worst that's going to happen? You're going to fail. You go backwards. You start over again. It's like, what's the fear that you're going to fail? If that is, then man, we have a lot more issues to address. So a little bit to kind of tie it together with your book and your experience and every teaching that you've done. We've talked a little bit about building your legacy, mapping it out. What's some tangible things that somebody could take, like, or would expect from your book that would help either budgeting, wealth planning, all that to kind of, you know, future pace them besides, you know, the things that we've already talked about with mission
yeah.
statement and getting in line?
In the book, I have chapters on investing, budgeting, estate planning, how to teach your kids.
Mm-hmm.
And at the end of each chapter, I put like action steps
mm-hmm.
of like, okay, these are the steps you can take to accomplish the things that have been mentioned in this particular chapter. And so
mm-hmm.
it's actually just really practical.
Mm-hmm.
But believe it or not, I think some of the first steps people can take if they're doing the real estate route is to figure out how much a down payment they need
mm-hmm.
and divide it by 18 months. And
mm.
save that amount of money every month. Give themselves
yeah.
a year and a half. So if they have to get a side hustle, if they have to start Instacarting,
mm-hmm.
if they need to get a job that makes more money, there needs to be a goal that
mm-hmm.
like within inside of 18 months, I am going to purchase my first
mm-hmm. yeah.
investment property. And also, if possible, to start dollar cost averaging in the stock market, which means you buy in every month and some months the market's up and some months the market's down. But over the course of like 12 months, you dollar cost average
mm-hmm.
versus like putting everything in January and it just kind of goes like this.
Yeah.
So you get to capture it at different prices, which is really great. And I always tell new investors that exchange traded funds, which is an ETF, mm-hmm. it's like a basket of stocks, mm-hmm. is a really great way to get started because it diversifies you, because most of them have like 100 positions. So it's like mm-hmm. Apple, Google, Microsoft, Yahoo, you know. Mm-hmm. So instead of like putting all your money in, let's say, Tesla, mm-hmm. Faith and I drive Teslas, but, you know, Elon wakes up one day and decides, you know, to get married and nobody likes his wife, the stock goes down. Mm-hmm. So the stock market can be emotional based on what the media puts out there. Mm-hmm. So sometimes it's better to, you know, be more diversified.
Yeah.
Especially with smaller amounts of money.
Yeah. And then if Dylan was sitting here, like, I think that there was a time that everybody was, and I'm not dogging on it. It's for some people, it's not for us. Some people were very into like Bitcoin and everything like that. And I back up with what you say of like, we diversify with like stocks and like real estate and kind of exploring which one's going to ebb and flow. Cause at different times in the market, the stock's going to do really great.
Yeah.
And at different times in the market, real estate's going to do really great. And it's just kind of finding that like lane where you kind of almost are like a buffer. But I also say like, get into something that you feel educated, knowledge about, and you also feel passionate about, because if you're just getting it in to be a fab, to ride the wave, to get to the high of I made a really quick buck,
yeah,
it's really not going to teach you that sustainable wealth of future pacing, what the actual end goal and mission is, you know, for wealth building. So
for sure. I mean, there is definitely like a get rich quick.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah.
Vibe among the crypto community.
Yeah.
So, you know, some of it, there's potential and there's yeah. something to it.
Totally.
But it's not regulated yet. So mm-hmm. it's a little bit like the Wild Wild West
yeah.
in the sense of like the finance industry.
Yeah.
I think at some point, though, it'll get some regulation through Congress and
be a little bit more
stable.
Yeah, stable. That's a good word. Well, I appreciate you coming on the Hustle Podcast. I know there's so much more stuff that we could dive into of creative ways to look at money and to invest. How would people connect with you if they had more questions, wanted to learn more from you and whatnot?
Yeah, they can follow me on Instagram. It's just my name, Samia Petalino, or get my book on Amazon.
Perfect. Well, thanks so much for tuning into the Hustle Podcast, and we will see you next week.